97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. We have a very good show for you today. It is on financial planning for dummies because, let's be honest, I am a dummy when it comes to financial planning, and I want to take you on this journey with me because it's something we all should know about, be paying attention to, and actually doing. And so I have found a wonderful expert who will not make fun of my questions to come and be on the air with me. I have with me Beth LaPierre. Welcome, Beth.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today, Kristen.
I'm so glad you are here.
And you're not a dummy.
Right.
You're not a dummy.
About this, I am, and I'm okay. Like, I think it's important in life to realize where you don't know what you're doing, and this is just one area where I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm just really excited to have you here and have you talk through this with myself and with the audience about what we need to be thinking about. And Beth, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So the world that I live in is meeting with individuals, with couples, with business owners, and helping them define, perhaps for the first time, what financial freedom or financial security means to them. And as you might imagine, that can be a very different story at different ages in our lives, at different life stages, depending on our health, depending on a whole variety of things. But in general, when we're talking about financial security and financial planning, we're talking about an offensive side and a defensive side.
Okay. So that makes sense to me. All right. So you are with Northwestern Mutual, correct?
That's correct.
So what does Northwestern Mutual do?
So Northwestern Mutual is a holistic financial planning company, and we do exactly what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
So we offer a variety of insurance solutions that include life insurance, disability income insurance, long-term care insurance, annuities, which kind of straddle the insurance and the investment world. That's all the defensive side. And then on the offensive side, we offer a variety of solutions as they pertain to wealth creation, wealth protection. So that's your investment options.
All right. So when you talk about offensive and defensive, offensive to me means that you are looking to actively gain money out in the marketplace. You're out there, you're doing everything you can to increase the most amount of money to head in your general direction.
That's right. So when we're thinking about the offensive plan, most people have a long-term goal in mind. And for most of us, that's retirement, making sure that we have enough saved at retirement, not just to get us to retirement.
Right.
And this is a key differentiator, and I want the audience to be thinking about that. The goal isn't just to get us to retirement, it's to get us through retirement. We're living longer. We've got medical advances on our side. And so if you think about typical retirement age of 65, and if you live to 95, which is not unheard of,
no.
That's 30 years. 30 years. And you're not earning an income from a job. So we need to make sure that you're working in your offensive side of your plan to make sure you've got those assets available to you so you don't outlive them.
So that kind of scares me. Because, I mean, you're talking about creating 30 years worth of wealth to live off of.
Right.
In often not even 30 years time.
Well, so, hopefully if you've started working in your early 20s.
Right. But that implies you've been saving this whole time.
Yeah, that's
retirement.
A really good point. That's a very, very good point. And a lot of folks, especially in American culture, we're really good consumers, right?
Yes.
Whatever we get in our
really
paycheck.
Really good consumers.
That's what we spend.
Really good.
I see it, I spend it. That's right. That's right. So the sooner you can reach out to a financial planning expert, someone like me, someone who does this type of work, the better. Even if you don't feel like you make a lot of money, even if you don't think, gosh, what benefit can I get out of it? Start early. That Albert Einstein talked about compounding interest as being one of the marvels of the world. It truly is. Now, that being said, if you haven't, not all is lost. You know, it's never too late to start saving.
So if you're starting to save, let's say you're 40 and you're starting to save for retirement in ways that you haven't before, you're looking at being retired for 25, 30 years. You're planning on working till you're 65, so you've got 25 years, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you have to, for every penny you earn, put one or half of that in some type of savings? Because that doesn't seem realistic.
No, no. And it's really not as easy as a rule of thumb like that.
Right.
You know, so part of the financial planning process is getting really clear about your personal objectives.
Okay.
What's important to you? What is the goal? Right. So if I could put you and I into a time machine,
right,
and zap us forward 20 years or whatever mm-hmm. your retirement age is, if you think about, gee, what would make my retirement work? How much money do I think in today's dollars would I need on a monthly basis to live? And a lot of my clients, think about this as a staggered approach. As you might imagine, if indeed you retire at 65, mm-hmm. most of us, maybe for the first 10, maybe 15 years, that's when we're going to be in our biggest spending time
okay.
and doing those things in retirement that we dream about, whether that's travel. Or, you know, that's what a lot, most people, what are you going to do in retirement? I'm going to travel. So we do that early on. That's the full go retirement phase. And then it might be slow go. You know, maybe you don't need as much because now you're getting a little bit older, you're slowing down, so you're spending less, barring any health issues.
Right.
And then maybe for the last 10 years or so in a strategy, it's why I affectionately call the no-go. Doesn't mean you're not doing anything.
From 85 to 95, you ain't doing nothing.
That's right.
He's in a wheelchair.
Family and friends come to us. So you may not necessarily need that initial monthly amount for the entire time, and that can be helpful to think about it. And the other, you know, so your original question was, if I'm 40, how do I figure out how much?
Right. And
that's why it's really important to sit with someone who does what I do
right.
to just do a download of where mm-hmm. are you now? What have you saved? What income streams do you have? Is there a pension? What are your thoughts on Social Security? How much will be coming in there? Are there annuities already? Most people have most of their savings in their company's 401k plan, if mm-hmm. there is such a thing, or
right.
403b plan. So once we know where you are and once we know where you want to go, only then can we figure out, okay, what's the plan to get there?
So you mentioned a couple different things I want to follow up on. One is streams of income. What are your streams of income?
Right.
So what would those likely be for folks?
That's in retirement. Is that what you're
Yeah, or just
up?
In general, like help us just okay. as an audience identify our various streams of income.
Okay, so in a retirement strategy, we're thinking about streams of income in a couple of ways. And one is, think about your fixed expenses, those things that are not necessarily going to go away throughout your entire retirement. So, for example, if your home is in a homeowners association and you're always going to have homeowners association dues, that's a fixed expense. If you have a mortgage still, that's mm-hmm. going to be a fixed expense for X number of years. Whatever those expenses are, you want to have a strategy to make sure that an income stream covers those expenses no matter what. And
right.
often that's Social Security. We at least now know that that exists, and we know that those checks are coming in.
And how much is Social Security roughly? Can you break that down for us a little bit?
That's really tough to estimate.
Right.
Because it depends on how long you've been in the workplace and how mm-hmm. much money you earned. But it's not enough to retire on for most people.
Right.
Right. If we're looking at, even if a couple thousand dollars comes in a month, it's important to remember it's taxable income.
Okay.
And, well, again, depending on tax brackets, but it is taxable income. And that Social Security, you can sort of think of it as a pension because you get it as long as you live, right? So we want to make sure that there's an income stream that you can't outlive.
Yes.
And that income stream covers those fixed expenses. So if Social Security doesn't do it, do you have a pension or not? And if that doesn't do it, how do we create your own pension? And so there's
a
way
to do
that. So is a
pension similar to a 401k and all that kind of thing?
So a pension is given to someone when they typically, these are from days of yesterday when.
That's what I was saying. Like, I don't hear a lot about pension talks.
You don't hear a lot. You know, state employees get pensions as of now. Okay. It's one of the best benefits of working for the state. But big companies like GE, et cetera, mm-hmm. those that our grandparents worked for, used to offer pensions. And this was a retirement stream of income that you would get at retirement. And those have largely gone by the wayside and have been replaced with 401k contributions, where you make a contribution and sometimes the company will match up to a certain amount to help get to retirement. And they just became too top-heavy. They were not sustainable for companies to do and remain profitable.
And I'll just throw in a little bit about a 401k, just something to consider in terms of my own work history. I worked with a company that offered a 401k, and they did some type of half match or, I don't know, 3% match or something like that. My husband worked for a different company that had a much more generous matching program. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating, depressing, but fascinating to see how rapidly his, you know, 401k built and mine did not go nearly as far just based on what the company was doing.
That's right.
And I think a lot of younger people anyway aren't paying attention to something like that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, unfortunately, so many people only contribute to the 401k what they get matched. And so I would say the most typical match that I see is 3%. And so very often an employee will sign up and they'll say, oh, you're going to give me 3%? Well, then I'll do 3%. Well, realistically, long term, you need to be saving at least 15 to 20% of your income to be able to retire.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about that. You are listening to the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Hiemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Hiemstra. You're listening to The Art of Potential Show, and I'm talking with Beth LaPierre of Northwestern Mutual. We're talking about a topic we all need to be thinking about, which is financial planning and retirement. And Beth's last comment that she left us with was that we need to be saving between 15 and 20% of our income for retirement. Now, that all sounds well and good. However, as a lot of us know, just the daily expenses of living, finding 15 to 20% isn't always doable.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So another thing that's really important to think about is that insurance and investment planning is a lifelong process, right? Very rarely can any of us snap our fingers and have everything done and magically perfect the way we want it to be. And there are different demands during life. You know, I remember when I was in my 20s and wouldn't it have been great if I had been in the habit of saving 10 to 15 to 20% of my income, but I was earning less, right? Our first jobs out of school.
Oh my gosh.
I was living in Boston. I barely had enough to get to the end of the month.
Right. You don't. I lived in DC. Same thing. It was a lot of fun.
That's
You might be able to go to a happy hour that had food and, you're trying to maximize your pennies at that point.
That's right. That's right. But that being said, anything that you can do to be mindful of where your money is going, and it never ceases to surprise me that people aren't as mindful of it. And the Starbucks culture that we live in, thinking, you can grab a $3 coffee here and there. Well, my goodness, you do that 5 days a week and there's $15. Mm-hmm. You take $15 and do that for a month and there's $60 that you could have saved. So that's just what I mean by being mindful. I certainly don't encourage any of my prospects to change their lifestyle and make life absolutely miserable so that they can get to retirement. You know, that's not what we're talking about. It's really talking about making a plan and then finding a way to make that plan come to fruition.
All right. So let's take me through then as a client. Let's say that I'm going to change my age and I'm going to make myself 40. And I work for the state. So I have the state, it sounds like a pension plan headed my way. And but that's not going to be, let's say I just started working for the state.
Okay.
So I have how many years? 25 years until I'm able to retire, will be retiring.
Okay.
And I want to have the same income level. Let's say that I have $5,000 a month. This is a random number. And I want to have that same number as I move through. And my state pension plan will, I don't know, probably give me a couple thousand dollars. So how would you help me to reach that goal?
Sure, sure. So that would, thank you for setting that up and kind of helping to paint the picture. So what I would do is understand from you, since you're 40, what you did up until that point. And hopefully you had worked in the private sector up until anywhere from your mid-20s to 40. And hopefully you had put some money away, whether that was in a company-sponsored retirement plan like a 401k or an individual retirement account. But we need to get a download from you on where are your other assets.
So let's say, because you need a number here, let's say I have $25,000 saved.
Okay. Period.
Period. Okay. That's it. That's what I have in my retirement.
Okay. So the analysis, and as you might imagine, there's some pretty sophisticated computer software.
Yes, I would only imagine.
That can crunch these numbers.
Account all kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah. So the computer analysis is going to spit out a number for you of what it's going to take to get you to that magic $5,000 a month at retirement.
Right.
Assuming a whole bunch of factors. We need to make some assumptions because no one has a crystal ball on what's inflation going to do. And so I have a conversation with you about what you think inflation is going to do. And we use your number in your plan.
Okay.
This is your plan. It's
yes,
not my it is. Plan for you. It's your plan.
I know, but you don't know and I don't know. Who
That's
knows
right. No, we don't know. But we can, you know, we can look back on history.
Okay.
And if you're ultra conservative, we're going to beef up that inflation and make it probably 3.5%. If you're not as conservative, we might put in a modest inflation of 2%, right? So really getting to know you is vitally important.
Absolutely.
It's, I want to say this again. It's not my plan for you. This is your plan for you. I'm your tour guide. I am your tour guide that's going to ask really important questions to understand you. I'm going to give you some education along the way and ultimately let you decide what you want to do. Okay, but back to the plan. So we need to put some assumptions in there. What's inflation going to do? What kind of rate of return? This is the money that you're going to earn on that existing $25,000 that you have.
Yep.
Do we want to tell the system you might get over the next 20 some odd years? And again, I don't have a crystal ball, but we have to put in our most educated guesses. And this is going to go back to that conservative or not nature of yours. If you're very conservative, we're going to put a lower rate of return in. If you're invested really aggressively and you're willing to take more risks in your investments, we're going to put a higher number in for you. Let's go to Social Security. I tend to believe that it will be around. It's just going to look a little different than it does today. Right. Can you imagine the politician that's going to run on the platform? I am running for president of the United States and I'm going to abolish Social Security.
I just can't. Yeah. And I actually want to go off on a tangent real quick. What if you have been a stay-at-home parent and then this is the first thing you're getting? So you don't have any Social Security at that point. Is that correct?
If you have not had any any quarters of earn it, correct. Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, and we do look at husbands and wives and whoever has stayed at home and whoever hasn't and work their plan together if indeed that's what they want to do. But sure, that's not an option for someone who hasn't put into the system.
Right.
So we just need to tell this computer analysis as much as we can about you and where you want to go. And then it, in turn, is going to share, okay, if that's the goal, you need to save X number of dollars. And it's going to give us some options. It will share a flat amount. Save another $100 a month, flat for the rest of your life, you're going to get there.
Okay.
Or save $75 a month now, and we're going to increase that 3% every year, and that'll get there, or whatever the case may be. But the point is, you need data to make decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and financial planning is both very emotional, right? We're talking about money.
Right. And I do want to talk about that. Yeah. Actually, let's take a break, because when we come back, I want to talk about the emotions with money and kind of the messages we've had our whole lives with money and what that means. And, you know, okay, that's what we're going to talk about. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is The Art of Potential Show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Beth LaPierre of Northwestern Mutual. We're talking about financial planning, and Beth, let's talk about the emotions behind money. Now, you've been doing this, working with people for a very long time. What are some common money emotions you see coming through?
Yeah, you might imagine. I've seen them all. You know, the money messages that we had growing up, I think, are really important to pay attention to.
Absolutely.
And to think about, because we all have a relationship with money, yet rarely do we think about it that way.
Yeah, my relationship with my husband or my children or my parents, but not...
Not money.
Not money.
Not money. But we do.
Yep.
Whether we're conscious of it or not. And so part of the process that I bring clients through is helping make them perhaps more conscious of what that relationship with money is because of the emotions that go behind it. And so you can think to yourself, what was the money message growing up in my house? How was it talked about? Was it talked about? Is it okay to talk about money? Society tells us not really.
Right. Unless you have a lot of it and you're famous.
That's right. And then you can...
And you're a rapper.
Or a celebrity on right. one shape, way, shape, right. or form. That's right. But in general, we don't talk about it. And so often when someone's talking with me, they're sharing things with me. And I tell them this, you're going to share things that you've never talked about with anybody before. Because we don't walk around to cocktail parties say, gee, what'd you put in your 401k last year?
No, we have a lot of other things that we're more than happy to discuss.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. We'll talk about the price we paid for the latest pair of shoes we got or the sale going on somewhere, but not this. So back to the emotional side to it, I think it's important to pay attention to what money messages you received growing up, because these are stories. It's not necessarily fact. They're stories in our head. And then pay attention to whether or not those are showing up in our adult life and whether they're working for us or not, right? So often sometimes a child might grow up and surpass his or her parents' socioeconomic status.
Right. And that's what you want.
Yet if there are messages from that other life that are showing up in their current life that aren't working, then we need to pay attention to that. In short, what I'm trying to say is you can't solve a money problem with more money.
Interesting. So do you hire a therapist at that point, or how do you work through that?
Maybe. You know, sometimes.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes there are.
Because you got to get through it, and you can't get through it with your, you know, your, a lot of people when they have issues, you talk to your close friends or, you talk to your family. I don't even think close friends talk about money with each other.
No. Gosh, my best friend and I think we finally disclosed our earnings, and I don't even know why or how it came up in conversation. I just had no idea, and she had no idea.
Right.
And maybe it's not important, but it's interesting when we're so guarded with it.
Yeah.
When you meet with someone like me and talk about financial planning, it can be uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it can feel very much like you're exposed.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, don't look at here.
Yeah.
Look somewhere else.
And most of us.
Look at my bright, shiny new car.
Most of us, right, have a gap in our insurance and investment planning.
Mm-hmm.
Most everyone I sit with needs additional life insurance.
That's why they come see you, because they're like, ooh.
They come see me because I've interrupted their lives a little bit and say, we need to talk about this. As good as I am at what I do, and I think I'm pretty good at it, my phone is not ringing off the hook, right? It really takes me to interrupt your life and say, hey, I heard great things about you. I do great work. Let's talk about it.
Right.
And start that conversation. And for those that are listening out there, if someone does that to you, it's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Pause, take the meeting, and go and have an exploratory conversation. because that's all it is. It's an exploratory conversation, and you need to kind of sense if there's a good fit there, and anything will be a benefit when you're talking about planning for your financial future.
Well, and every family has different things that they have to contend with. So you have, you know, you have kids that you have to get through college. You Sure. have health issues that you might know are coming down the pipeline just because you can see starts of them now.
Sure.
You have families who have special needs. How does that all work into the process?
Yeah, that's really important, and I can speak to the special needs intimately, and I'll do that in a second. But part of the process is also identifying short, mid, and long-term goals and thinking through with you, hey, well, in the next 1 to 3 years, what do you see happening? There could be a job change. There could be a college career started. There could be we're going to sell the house and upsize or downsize. Those types of things. And it's important that that disclosure happen so that any recommendations that someone like me makes is within your context.
Right.
Right. I need to know as much as I can about you, both emotionally and financially and personally, because if you're, again, if we talk about all this, but I didn't know you're also trying to save $50,000 for a down payment on a house, oops.
Right.
That's kind of important to know. So on the note of the thinking about our kids with special needs, I have a son who has Down syndrome. And so that immediately changed my husband's and my financial planning.
Yeah.
So we are planning a retirement for three, not mm-hmm. for two. It has changed our insurance, the defensive side to our plan. It's changed some of those decisions. It's really important for those families who do have a family member with special needs that they're thinking about to seek out expert guidance and surround yourself with a team of people who know more than you do. So, you know, you started this program with financial planning for dummies.
Yeah.
Certainly, the special needs arena can feel like landmines. You don't know what you don't know. But what I have found is the more I surround myself with other parents, with other experts, the more I learn and the less I feel like a dummy.
The more engaged you are in the process because you have a framework by which to work from.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think when you don't know what you don't know, you don't even have a framework to hang it on. So it's even hard sometimes to remember the things you don't know because you don't have any context for them.
Yeah. And no one likes to feel incompetent.
No.
No one. I go to the dentist and I have no idea what my dentist is doing. And I think we can all relate to this, whether you're going to the dentist, seeing an attorney, or getting your car fixed, if you're not in that, or seeing someone like me, a financial planner,
right.
You have to trust that person. That level of trust is probably the most important piece of the process.
It seems to me it would be, because if you are coming, you're talking about your life. You're talking about your life and your security. And ultimately, yes, you can trust yourself. But when you bring in a financial planner, it's because you, at some level, don't trust your own self to make your financial planning things without having outside influence and somebody else who knows about it. That's my take on it.
Yes.
And so you've got to trust that the person you're talking to truly has your best interest and not their own, you know, commission-based or whatever product line in the forefront of their mind because they're looking at you kind of as what's your payoff going to be.
Absolutely. And so when you're selecting someone to work with, I really encourage folks to ask, how are you compensated? Because that's important to know. And not all financial advisors are alike. Some
right.
are fee for financial planning. Some earn commission.
Yep.
Some earn both.
Yep.
And so don't hesitate to ask.
So how is yours done?
So my practice is set up that I am compensated by the companies that I represent. So mm-hmm. if I make a recommendation to a client on the insurance side and they put that recommendation into place, I am compensated by the company in the form of a commission. So there's no extra fee for the client. On the investment side, if there are recommendations that put them in more of an advisory role, it typically ends up being a percentage of the amount of assets that are under management is the technical term
yep.
for it.
Assets
and it really is not a one-size-fits-all. It depends client by client. But what I will say is that sometimes, not always, but sometimes there are financial advisors who charge a fee, a flat fee for the plan. And then if they make recommendations that involve insurance, for example, they may also be getting the commission.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So a little bit of double dipping. Again, that's fine.
As long as you know what it is.
Yeah,
right.
Feel free to ask. You know, I share with folks, anything I ask you, you can ask me back in return. It is a two-way street.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about the defensive end of financial planning. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra, and I'm talking with Beth LaPierre. She is with Northwestern Mutual. We're talking about financial planning for dummies, and we've just had some really interesting things. We're talking about how financial plans come to be, what we need to be thinking about, all kinds of exciting things. Now, Beth, early on in this interview, you brought up defensive financial planning. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the defensive side of the plan, remember, there's two sides, the defensive side and the offensive side.
And offensive, from what I understand, is mutual funds. It's investing type things. What am I missing?
It's wealth accumulation.
Wealth accumulation.
Whatever your definition of wealth is, where are you saving dollars and in what vehicles are you saving them? Because there's all kinds of different tax advantages and disadvantages depending on where those dollars are going. But that's
so
your offensive strategy.
IRA.
Roth IRAs.
Roth IRAs,
typical brokerage accounts. Yeah. All of these have different pros and cons to them. So that's offensive.
Okay.
The defensive side to people's financial plan is a really solid plan B. Okay, so plan A.
Plan B's good.
Plan B. Plan A is you live a nice long life, you save lots of money, you retire, you sail off into the sunset. Yay, life is good. Plan B is, what if something happens along the way that wasn't exactly the plan? What if one of you dies prematurely?
Mm-hmm.
What if one of you gets sick?
What is prematurely? I hate to, but is there a certain age in which you are premature? You know, like,
I suppose
when you're
pregnant
and a baby comes early, it's premature.
That's right. That's right. Well, so anything before life expectancy could be one definition of premature.
So what is life expectancy right now?
Oh, gosh. Mid-70s, late 78, somewhere in that time frame. Yeah.
Okay.
I think most clients are thinking about a premature death during their working years.
Yep.
So if we think about our most valuable asset, when I ask folks that, what's your most valuable asset? What do you think most people say?
I would think their bank account or something like that.
Bank account or their house.
Yeah.
Their house.
Yeah.
But the reality is our ability to get up and go to work every day is our most valuable asset.
And it's time, I'm sure, too.
Right. So my ability to earn an income for my family for the next 20, 25 years, that's my – so if I check out early in that time frame, that's a premature death, not when it was planned. So that's on the defensive side. On those same lines, protecting and ensuring my income earning potential. We don't think twice about insuring our house, our car.
Oh, no. We also have
our pets.
To by law.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Have to by law. There's a piece of me that kind of wishes people had to do life insurance by law. No, I'm teasing. I'd probably be out of business. But the disability income insurance is making sure that if indeed something happens and you're taken out of the workforce, there's an income stream that would be provided for you and your family up until age either 65 or 70. Let's see. On the defensive side, how do we protect against longevity? So we're living longer. Medical advances.
We're living longer, yes.
Living longer. So how do we make sure we don't outlive our assets? And often we can hedge against that with thinking about long-term care insurance and or annuities and creating that income stream that we talked about earlier that you can't outlive. So that's the defensive side.
Okay, so let's go through these one by one, just so I'm clear on them. So long-term care implies that somebody's taking care of you for a long time. So yes, you're living longer, but you might need more help.
Yeah, long-term care is if there's a chronic health
right.
need
okay.
That requires some additional...
Alzheimer's.
That's
right. Would that qualify
Absolutely.
Long-term care?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. So long-term care means that you have insurance, and if you have to go into some type of health, you have it. What does an annuity do?
So an annuity is a contract with an insurance company where they have a chunk of money.
So you give them a chunk of money.
You give them a chunk of money either at once or you accumulate it over time.
Okay.
And at a given point, you have the option to annuitize that money. So there's two phases in an annuity, the accumulation phase and then the distribution phase.
All right.
Okay. So in exchange for that lump of money, the insurance company will pay you X amount of dollars for as long as you live. And the reason an annuity is with an insurance company is because it's as long as you're going to live. It's tied to something horrible called a mortality table.
Right.
Right.
Well, you've got to have,
Right. The actuaries are crunching some data. That's right. They're crunching some data and trying to figure out, okay, what's the likelihood? How long is Beth going to live? And they calculate it and they spit out a number. And that's the amount that I will get as long as I live.
Okay, so that just reminds me of an interest rate. I mean, I'm trying to break it down in a way I understand it.
Sure.
So you have your bank account. Let's say you have $50,000 and you have a 3% interest rate. That interest rate is perpetually going to go.
And spit off some income to you.
And spit off some income.
Yeah.
Is that what an annuity is?
Very much so. It's working very much in the same manner. And let's think about one other thing, that mortality table conversation.
Right.
People who lived in the 1980s, well, many of us were here in the 1980s.
Yeah, we were.
But if you bought an annuity.
I had great hair in the 80s, I want to add. It's very big.
If you bought an annuity in the 1980s versus buying one now, the payout from the one that you bought in 1980s is going to be higher because our life expectancy was lower then than it is now. And life expectancy continues to grow. So if we're living longer, the payouts are slightly smaller, as you might imagine, right? Because they're looking at averages.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the numbers in front of me, so don't quote me on this. But if in 1980 our average life expectancy was 72 versus an average life expectancy now of 78, you know, they're contractually looking at, or rather not contractually, they're doing the math and figuring out what the monthly payment would be on that annuity then versus now. I'm getting way technical.
Yeah.
The point is, let's bring it up. The point is, an annuity is a strategy used often in a retirement strategy to create a source of income that you can't outlive. Remember we talked earlier?
Which is very reassuring.
Yeah, that those fixed expenses.
Right.
Those one, you know, no matter what, we know we need $3,000 a month coming in.
Right.
And then anything over that is discretionary income. So we want to use an annuity or a pension and or Social Security to cover those fixed expenses. And then we're going to use our investment assets to cover the discretionary expenses.
All right. One last question. What is compound interest?
Compound interest is a beautiful thing. Besides that, though, compound interest is if you have a dollar.
Yes.
And if you earn 5% on that dollar,
so you have a dollar
every
five.
Year, you'll have a dollar five. And then that next year, you go in and your bank account has a dollar five, and that's going to earn interest. And it's going to earn more than 5 cents because there was a dollar point oh five in there. It's going to earn a little bit more.
So you have a dollar 10,
a dollar 11. Right.
Something like that.
In the beginning, marginal difference.
Right.
But over time, as you might imagine, those differences are enormous because you're reinvesting the interest that is earned back into the initial sum, and that then earns the interest rate over and over and over. So the biggest takeaway around compound interest for those younger listeners out there is the earlier you start, the more you can take advantage of it. We either need a little bit of money and a lot of time, or a lot of money and a little bit of time. I like the first one a little better.
I know, we all do.
That's right.
And then there are, you know, those in between who, you know, are figuring it out as they go,
you
too.
You figure it out as we go.
And which brings us to the last point. We do have some people I know who will want to talk to you and figure this out because they do have questions that I haven't asked you. How do people get in touch with you?
Sure. They can get in touch with me either by email or through reaching out by phone. So my phone number is 919 919-3771. 919-899-3771. That will get you to my office, or you can reach me via email, and it's Elizabeth, Elizabeth, dot LaPierre, LaPierre, at nmnorthwesternmutual.com.
And I will also, because that's a lot to remember, I will have it on the artofpotential.com's website, so you can reach her through that. While you are there, please take a moment and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Thank you for listening.